the first discovery of the Vedic rishis. You understand the word rishi, no? Rishi is a sage who is a poet, who is capable of seeing the truth and expressing the truth in the most sublime manner. Rishi is the guide, the teacher, wise teacher, illumined teacher. That is Rishi. So, the first discovery of the Vedic rishis was very simple, that life is a battle. But this battle is not merely among the physical living creatures as we know them, but also a battle between the invisible forces. These invisible forces are divisible into two categories. One, benign forces, very kind forces, the forces which are for divinity. The opposite forces are the forces of evil, asuras, rakshasas, pishachas, panis, vritra. I have given so many names, each one having a specific function or the role to play in the battle. I was telling you about the second discovery, and for that I began to tell you a story of a legend. A certain number of rishis, let us say 9, they were in search of the truth. Now how to seek the truth? And I told you that they had found out the means of finding the truth. What were the means? In one word, it is sacrifice. In Sanskrit it is called yajna. In English we call it sacrifice. And I told you what a sacrifice means. Sacrifice implies fire. All sacrifice implies fire. Without fire there is no sacrifice. And therefore I spoke to you last time of Agni. Agni means fire. And then I told you that fire is not physical fire. There is an inner fire. And then I gave you the first verse of the Rig Veda where the fire is invited. So that one verse itself gives you a good indication of what sacrifice means. You have first of all to invoke the fire, the inner soul which is the fire in us. Awake, ignite the fire. So this verse, the very first verse says, I worship the fire. Agnim ire. Ire means I am worshipping. You invoke the fire by saying I worship the fire. So the first step is invocation. Invocation of the fire. That is the first step of the Agni, of the sacrifice. Then you put it in the front. Purohitam. It is that which is in the front. So put the fire into the front. Then once it takes up the front role, things become easier. It knows the rita. The fire knows what is right. So once he is your leader, you are in the hands of one who can guide you to the right. It also knows what is not only right action, but also the right time of right action. In Sanskrit we have got the word ritu. Ritu is a season. It comes from the word rita. Ritu and rita are combined. The right season of the right action. So you know what is the right action and at what time the right action is to be performed. I told you that in India they developed the science of time. I spoke of astrology also to some extent. The entire astrology is based upon the science of time. And I told you that those who know the Agni, those who know fire, they don't need to go to astrology. Inwardly they know what is the right time for the right action. And then it is the one who knows how to sacrifice, the manner of sacrifice. The manner is very important. In the Vedic literature, manner has been given of great importance. How you do it. Question is not only of doing something, but how you do it. There is a vidhi. Vidhi means the rules. The what is to be done first, what is to be done second, what is to be done at the end. So it is the Agni, the fire knows that once you made him your leader, the sacrifice can be done. Now sacrifice implies a journey. This is another truth they discovered regarding sacrifice. As you make sacrifice, that is to say, as you burn yourself, burn what you are and what you have, by invoking the truth that you want to discover, you simply speak the truth, invoke the truth, aspire for the truth, and as you go on aspiring, you go on burning yourself, whatever you are and what you have is imperfect. So these imperfect things are to be offered. Whatever we are imperfect. This imperfection is to be thrown into the fire, where it is burned. It is this burning which is of essence, and as you burn, you begin to get push. There is a motion that happens. You move from untruth to the truth. There's a journey. That is why the sacrifice has been described in the Veda as a path of ascension, as a path of going upwards. As you go on burning yourself, you find that you are moved, there is a progress which is made. This progression of moving from untruth to truth, there is a famous sentence in the Vedic literature, Asato ma sadgamaya, from falsehood lead me to the truth. So this is the path of sacrifice, and you go on making a sacrifice. As you go on making a sacrifice, you discover more and more of the truth. You become truthful. Not only you discover truth, you become truthful, you become yourself, you become true self. The falsehood is shed, as it were, burnt away, and you emerge out of the burning, something that is golden in you, emerges which can't be burned, it is inextinguishable. You emerge out of the burning. Now, the story is that 9 rishis began to make sacrifice in search of the truth and went on and on and on, and for a certain period they went on making sacrifice, and always they reached almost the right point of achieving the truth but could not. This is the legend. Wise people. In Sanskrit they are called Navagvas. It's a story of Navagvas. The story of the 9 sages. They were in search of the truth. These 9 sages were in search of the truth. And they went on making sacrifice. They burned themselves to find out the truth. For a certain period they went on and on. They reached a certain point where the truth was about to be discovered, but they could not find it. Then they started again. Again burning, burning, burning. Again they reached the same point, but could not enter into the truth. Again they started. Several times they did this, they were failing. Then came, there came a great help. A 10th sage came into a company. They were 9 themselves, but the 10th sage came to help. His name was Ayasya. Ayasya is a very famous name in the Veda. He was himself a great sage. The Navagvas became now Dashagvas. This is the famous legend of the Veda. Navagvas, the 9 sages, became 10 sages. And then they increased the period of their sacrifice. Up till now they were only doing sacrifice for a certain period. With the coming of Ayasya, there was a new advice given that the period for which you are making sacrifice is not enough. The period was increased. And that brought about a certain discovery. We are now coming to the third discovery. The second discovery was only secret of sacrifice. Burn yourself, move forward, make a progression. Then you take the help of another one. This also is a part of the discovery. And then with Ayasya, when the period of sacrifice was increased, what happened? Ayasya became universal. This was the discovery. That the truth cannot be discovered unless you become universal. This was the discovery made. They were failing all the time because this point of becoming universal was missing. So he became universal. Having become universal, there was a rise in universality. There are planes and planes of universality. And then they discovered Turiyam Sved. This is the Sanskrit word. Very important Sanskrit expression for the Vedic discovery. They discovered Turiyam Sved. Sved means that one which is Turiyam, which is the fourth. They discovered that one which is the fourth. As I told you, the language of Veda is algebraic. So that fourth is an algebraic expression. What is this fourth they discovered? The fourth is something above three principles. Matter, life and mind. These three were already known. But here there is no truth. It is mixture of truth and falsehood. In matter, life and mind, there is a mixture of truth and falsehood. It keeps you divided, narrow. Unless you become universal, you can't rise beyond these three elements, physical, vital, mental. In Sanskrit there are names of all the three. The physical is prithvi. Those who find Sanskrit words difficult, don't worry. Don't remember. But those who know Sanskrit a little, they will enjoy it. Therefore I am speaking of this. The physical is prithvi. The vital is antariksha. And the mental is dau. The physical is the ground which you see. That is prithvi. Antariksha is the wide space that you see around. Dau is the sky. These three words are often used in the Veda. Even to climb from prithvi to dau is a big climb. It's not easy to climb. Therefore, Veda speaks very often even of the journey from prithvi to dau, from earth to the sky. But sky actually represents the mind. To rise from the physical to the mental, that is an ordinary climbing. Although that also is quite a climb, but still it is ordinary climb. And as long as you continue this climb only to that extent, you fail, you don't get the truth. You need the help, a further help. Ayasya must come. And then you increase the period of your sacrifice. And you increase the period, and then you become universal, and you discover that fourth. You go beyond prithvi, antariksha and dau. You go beyond the physical, vital and mental. And this was a great discovery. This is celebrated in the Veda. This fourth is greatest discovery of the Veda, you might say, one of the greatest. There is still greater which I'll come to, but a supreme discovery as it were. Because they found that in that fourth, there is no mixture of falsehood at all. In the body, life and mind, there is a mixture of truth and falsehood. But when you go to the fourth one, in that fourth, there is no mixture, there is only truth and truth and truth alone. Satyam eva. Nothing but the truth. Widest, most universal, no narrowness at all, no crookedness at all. In the lower wide, physical, vital and mental, there is all crookedness. When we criticize each other and say, oh, he's crooked, don't eliminate yourself. As long as we live in the physical, vital and mental, all of us live in a crooked world. And our consciousness is crooked. And we live in a crooked manner, we think in a crooked manner. There is always a kind of a strategy. We want to escape from here, escape from that, make a profit here, drag this here, allow this, that here. We are generous, we are miser. All of the mixtures, all the time, we are all equal, nothing to choose. And then you come to the real thing that is to be chosen, where there is nothing but the truth. This was the great discovery. Mahaspantha, the great path was now opened up and they discovered this fourth one. This is the third discovery of the Veda. Sri Aurobindo has called this third discovery. This discovery of the fourth, that fourth, is the discovery of the supermind. This discovery of the supermind, that there is above the mind, there is supermind, and that one can ascend into it, one can go into it, one can live in it, where one can be absolutely straight, rijuta, straightforwardness. It is also concerned with rita. Rijuta and rita are all connected. There is nothing but the right. Everything is, all the rays of light are straight, nothing crooked. You have seen the flower which mother has called the flower of supramental action. You have seen that flower, flower of supramental action, a kind of a globe, Kadamba flower, in which so many, supramental sun. Yes, there is this, there are so many, yes. Yes, all straight. That is a symbolic presentation of the supramental, you might say. Everything is straight. That you can go into it, you can live in it. All knowledge is manifest there. You don't have to make an effort to know. Whatever is known immediately, spontaneously. It's almost like a magic. You want to know this, immediately it is known. Nothing is hidden, nothing is concealed. It's all blazing light. This is, as I am describing to you, this is a third discovery. It is not the Veda has written my first discovery, second discovery. I am describing the discoveries made by the Vedic rishis, and I am saying they made five basic discoveries. There are many discoveries, but I am trying to tell you in brief, five main discoveries. Among these five discoveries is a third discovery. The first is the discovery of the battle. Battle between the good and the evil, gods and asuras. Second is the discovery of sacrifice. The means by which you can make an ascension from lower levels to the higher levels. The third discovery is a discovery of the supermind. It's a great discovery of the Veda. In fact, in the Veda, what is very often celebrated constantly with great joy is the victory of discovery of the supermind. All darkness is destroyed. Tamaha neshat. All the darkness is finished. You can definitely say that all darkness is finished. The everlasting sun has arisen, which is never going to set. In the beginning there is only Usha, the dawn. When you are about to enter into the supermind, the first steps are the steps which are like entering into the dawn. Therefore in the Veda you find sometimes very beautiful descriptions of the dawn. Usha. Nisha has gone, the night has gone, and Usha has come, and the dawn has come, and then gradually you rise, and you enter into the supermind, where the sun never sets, everlasting sun. Now all the knowledge is now available to the supermind. As a result, they come to the fourth discovery. They find that this fourth one, what we call now the supermind in the light of Sri Aurobindo, this supermind is the universal action of reality, ultimate reality. This world that we see is not ultimate reality, is not ultimate, it is not the original, it is not the cause of itself, it is caused by something else. Whatever is caused by something else is not ultimate, it is a result of a cause. And if that cause again is a result of another cause, you go behind it. If that is also a result of another cause, you go behind it. You must have seen in many conversations between a mother and the child goes on asking a question, why? Then you give the answer, then says why? Then you say, this is the reason. Then the child says why? Then the child, mother says, all right, this is the answer. Then the child says why? And very often mothers are tired and say, now I want to answer you. This is what happens very often because we have not gone ourselves to the ultimate. So we cannot say why. Then you say it is like that. And there ends the conversation. But if you are a real seeker of the truth, you really find out why, the ultimate why, the final why, beyond which there is no question arising at all. Why? Because it's a cause of itself. What you find, if it is a cause of itself, in Latin it is called sui generis. Sui generis. Generis means the result. What is the cause of which produces a result. And sui is oneself. If the result is produced by oneself, then it is the end of the query. It is the final. So having reached this point, having seen the supermind, they discover there is still behind it. It is still not the end. Behind the supermind, there is still a further why. Because supermind itself is preceded, as it were, by an ultimate reality. Now that discovery of the ultimate reality is what may be called the greatest victory of the Vedic Rishis. Sri Aurobindo has said, the Vedic Rishis arrived at the loftiest realization. This is Sri Aurobindo's own words. Loftiest realization which cannot be surpassed. If you really read the ultimate, how can ultimate be surpassed? Therefore, they read the ultimate reality in all its splendor. It is the highest discovery they made. That discovery is one in which you find the explanation of everything else. You find the explanation of the supermind, of the mind, of life, of matter, and that which is below matter in conscience. You find all explanations by really realizing that reality. That was the discovery made, loftiest realization. Now what is the description of that reality given in the Veda? It is ekam, it is one. Ekam sat. It is one that exists, which can never be rubbed out. It exists. Many of things that we see, they exist for some time and then they vanish. Most of the things that we see in the world are of this kind. We see this flower here, after some time it will wither away, and then it will turn into dust in due course. It will no more remain the flower. Most of the things that we see in the world, even if they remain for years and years, 100 years, 200 years, 500 years, 1,000 years, like big mountains, but even they can be wiped out. But that ultimate reality can never, never, never be wiped out. Therefore, they describe it as Shashvatam. It is eternal. Ekam Sat Shashvatam. It is one reality which is eternal. I had told you last time a story of Indra and Agastya. No, not to them. There is a story between Agastya and Indra. Agastya is the name of a great rishi, great sage. He was in search of the truth. He wanted to know what is the ultimate reality. He wanted to become that reality. He was making sacrifices. And he found that he was being obstructed. Now normally it is Vritra who obstructs. But here he found, no, it was not Vritra who was obstructing. Here Indra was obstructing. The God, the benign God was obstructing him. Indra was obstructing. And I told you last time what Indra means. Indra is illumined intelligence. One who has got 1,000 eyes. So one who was having 1,000 eyes, he was obstructing the path of Agastya. So Agastya complains and says, "Oh Indra, I am your brother, I am your friend. Why do you obstruct me?" So Indra now replies. This is a dialogue between Indra and Agastya. Sri Aurobindo has described this dialogue. It is a very short dialogue, 5 verses. And then Sri Aurobindo has also given an illuminating commentary on it. One day you should read it. So, Indra, immediately, first of all, to show that I am not obstructing, he immediately describes the ultimate reality. He says, "Look, you are complaining, but what are you looking for? I know. You want the ultimate reality. And I am telling you now what is that ultimate reality." Right from the beginning, the very first verse is a description of that ultimate reality. I am revealing to you what is the ultimate reality. And he says, "It is neither yesterday nor today." This is the first description of that reality. It will be neither tomorrow. Neither yesterday nor today nor tomorrow. That is the first expression of that ultimate reality. Meaning thereby, it is not something which is yesterday and which will not be today. It is something that is nanunam asti nashvaha. Neither today nor tomorrow. It is eternal. That is the first description. It is eternal. And then he says, "Who knows that reality? That reality which is wonderful. Kas tadveda yad adbhutam. Who knows that reality which is wonderful?" Then with the very next sentence he gives the description why it is wonderful. How to describe the wonderful? It is one and yet it has a motion in the other. It is one. There is beside it no other one. And yet it is such a reality that has a motion in the other one. It's a very difficult sentence to understand. One reality which has a motion in the other. Anyasya chittam abhisancharanyam. It is one which has a motion. Abhisancharanyam, which has a motion, that which is sanchar, which moves. In what? Anyasya chittam. That other one is consciousness. It is itself existence. But that other one is consciousness. There is a distinction between existence and consciousness, which are both one. And yet you can distinguish between existence and consciousness. That's why it is adbhutam. It is wonderful. Something that you cannot grasp. It's that which is one and yet different from itself. Such is the reality. Reality is really that. It is itself and yet different from itself. It exists. It is existence. It is also consciousness. And there's a difference between coexistence and consciousness. It is in consciousness it has a movement. In existence it has no motion. In consciousness it has a motion. It moves, it does not move. Therefore, Adbhutam, it is strange. That which does not move and yet it moves. Therefore, it is very strange. Very often you ask the question, what is this statement? In fact, some of the people who don't understand the profundities of reality, they will dismiss as saying that this is written by somebody who does not understand. Primitive, barbaric man. One which is different from itself, one which is static and yet dynamic, that which moves and moves not. What is this? Only now in the recent physics, you know, recent physicians, physicists have found out that when you go, not to the ultimate reality, but when you go into the down matter, which is so much visible, you find that this visible becomes invisible. If you go down into matter, go down and down and down, you come to atom. Atom is not physically visible. But atom exists. Not only that, they went further down into matter. And they found that this matter, in atom, there is a huge structure. There is a nucleus. There is a proton. There is electron. In that small atom, and then there is a kind of a systematic motion. Electrons are constantly moving round and round and round. And then they found that there are 250 other and many more elements there. Then they came to a conclusion, now this is the latest. What is the nature of it? Is it particle or is it wave? You know the difference between particle and wave. What is particle? Particle is, if you take a little small sand, granule, little sand, you still feel it, something solid, somewhere some solidity is found. Now you see the wave, you have seen the waves of the ocean. Now, wave is something which you cannot hold. That is the speciality of it, the particle you can hold, it is something solid. Wave is something not solid. It moves out. You try to catch water in your hand. It cannot be caught. It passes away. It's wave. Now the question is, this particle, which is smallest particle in atom, is it particle or is it a wave? This is the question which was raised a few decades ago. And now the answer of the scientist is, it is both. It is both particle and wave. It is something like it is itself and yet something different from itself. So with regard to reality of the matter, modern physicists are now speaking the language of the Vedic Rishis. Vedic Rishis had said it is itself, yet it is a motion in the other one. Particle stands immobile. Wave moves. It has a motion in the other one. But it is this very particle which is a wave. It's not that there are two things, there is a wave and there is a particle. No. That thing which is particle itself is a wave. Such is the discovery of the modern physicists. In the light of this, now we can think and understand the Vedic Rishis were very, very, very wise. So illumined that they had the courage to say. They knew that what they are saying, people will not easily understand and accept even. Therefore, Indra says it is Adbhutam, it is strange. It is very wonderful. What I am going to tell you, you will not even easily understand. It is something which is itself, which is a motion into another, where there is no other one. There is only one. Reality is only one. It is that which is a motion into another. And then finally it says, utadhitam vinashyati. If you try to think it out, it will vanish. It can't be thought about. It's not by thinking that you can grasp it. So Indra was telling Agastya, Look, you are trying to find out the reality by your mind. You are making your great effort to think, to think, to think, to think. But that reality cannot be thought of. You cannot grasp by thought, because it is adbhutam, it is strange, it is wonderful. It is something that which is not. It is that which is different from itself. It is itself, but yet different from itself. It is static and yet is a motion in the other consciousness. Such is the reality. If you think, he says that now you are only trying to have power of the mind by which you try to understand. I am illumined mind. With my 1,000 eyes I have seen, because I have gone beyond the mind. Therefore you should come to me. You are trying to surpass me, overpass me. You don't care for me. Therefore I am obstructing. Not that I want to obstruct you. I am standing before you, I am obstructing. Why? Because you are trying to reach that reality by your mind. But you must come to me, I am not a mind. I am gone beyond the mind. Not that I am super mind, I am not that reality. I am not that Turiyam Svid. But I have got 1,000 eyes. And I know therefore that reality very well. So I want you to come to me. It may look egoistic. He says you worship me. That means you offer yourself to me, you come to me, I am like a guide to you, I am a helper to you. You will never get that reality if you don't come to me, because I am the gate. You have got to pass through me. Without me, how can you reach there? So he says to Agastya, you claim that you are my friend and you are my brother, but you don't look at me. You claim that you are my friend and you are my brother, but you don't look at me. So look at me. Make a sacrifice to me. That is to say, burn yourself, throw away your mind and everything, burn it, make an ascension, make a journey. You cannot reach that reality unless you make a sacrifice. And making sacrifice means you distribute yourself. You cannot make a sacrifice without distributing yourself. You want to go straight without distributing, without pouring out yourself, you don't want to make a sacrifice. When I am speaking to you, I am distributing myself. I am diffusing, as it were, pouring myself. I am telling you whatever I have read, what I have studied, distributing myself. It's a sacrifice. It's a burning. An effort which is made, which is an upward journey. So Agastya is told, you want to just go to the reality without distributing yourself. Distribute yourself, expand yourself, give yourself, make a sacrifice. And I am there, and then come to me and I will take you to that reality. This is the path that is given in the Veda for anyone who wants to know that ultimate reality. Now let us come to that ultimate. This is only a story I told you, but now let us see that ultimate reality. So to repeat, the first discovery was a discovery of the battle. Battle not only between the visible creatures, but also between invisibles. Second discovery was a discovery of the sacrifice. The third discovery was the discovery of that fourth one, Turiyam Svid, of the supermind. The fourth discovery was a discovery of the ultimate reality, beyond beyond, that which is beyond beyond, ultimate, final. Now that final reality is one without the second, ekam sat. And yet, it is not simple. It is simple complex. This is Sri Aurobindo's word. That reality is not simple, it is simple complex. It is at once itself and other than itself. Now in the Veda, we get therefore two names. the name of that one and the name of that one which is different from that one. That one is called in algebraic language the bull. If you read the Veda, you will often find the bull. Bull always means that one. The other one, which is also itself, is Dhenu, is the cow. This is one description of it. The other description is, it is He, the Supreme. There are many names of it given in the Veda. He is the Hiranyagarbha. He is the golden egg. The golden egg, from where everything comes out. The whole world, everything that we see, is originated from it. He is Prajapati. He is the father of all the creatures, Prajapati. But apart from that Prajapati, there is another, which is now known as Aditi. Aditi, this is the one name which I would like you to remember. Aditi. Aditi is the first original mother. That is to say, the original reality is the father, and mother is not different from the father. Father and mother are one, and yet mother is different from father. That Aditi is a supreme mother, the original mother. Although the original reality is the same as Aditi, there is a relationship between the two. That is why it is simple complex. Simple means that which has no relationship in it. That is the meaning of simple. Whenever you say it is simple means there is no relationship in it. When you say it is complex, it means there are internal relationships. That is the meaning of complex. It is simple complex. It has no relationship, yet it has relationships. It is simple complex. Now that Aditi is the one from whom everything originates. That is to say, Supreme can exist without any creation. And yet when there is creation, that creation can come out only from Him as Aditi. He Himself is Aditi. He without creation is He. He with creation is He that is Aditi. This is how you can understand this relationship. Now, without the knowledge of Aditi, you cannot understand how the whole world has manifested. Now, this is the fourth discovery, and I will not burden your mind with so many other details, but this is simple. What I have told you is very simple and something that is not very difficult to understand. Now I come to the last discovery, but that we shall do next time. Is that all right? The last discovery I shall tell you because a long discovery. The fifth discovery, it will take a long time. But if you have any questions so far, you are free to ask questions. Not adults, only children. Adults are not allowed to ask questions. It is because I am only, these questions are only to be asked by you. There is a question here. Vishwamitra is a great sage. Vishwamitra is a great sage, and the whole third chapter of the Rig Veda is attributed to Vishwamitra. It seems that there is a story on which a play is being played or being rehearsed among you, in which there is a conflict between Vasishtha and Vishwamitra. Right? So the question is that if Vishwamitra is so great, why was he quarreling with Vasishtha? That is the question. The story that you are now confronting, the story which you are rehearsing, is a story of Vishwamitra before he became such a great sage. He became a great sage, but before he became a great sage, he was not such a great sage. So that is why, and Vasishtha was already a great sage. So he was quarreling with a great sage actually. He was great, but not a great sage. You know, in India, there are many levels of development. The highest development is called Brahmarshi. Rishi who is Brahma. Rishi who is in possession of the highest knowledge. There is a lower grade, which is the grade of Rajarshi. What is Rajarshi? He is also Rishi, he is also aspiring, he is also kind of a sage, but not Brahmarshi. He is Rajarshi. What is Rajarshi? Rajarshi is a king who wants to become a sage. And king is, according to India, king is lower than the man of knowledge. One who knows is the highest. One who is only a king, he can rule, he can ask order, he can fight, he can protect people. But the knowledge of ultimate reality, the knowledge of the creation, the knowledge of Brahman and Aditi, all that knowledge he doesn't possess. And very often Rajarshi is marked by a temper of anger, what is called a great impetuousness, subject to impulses. You act on impulses, not upon thought, not upon knowledge. A wise man is one who sits quietly. In spite of the big storm, he remains steady. He is not like one who moves and one who does not move. That is the mark of a real Brahmarshi. He can act marvelously, powerfully, and yet he is always quiet. The stillness and the power, both of them are combined in a Brahmarshi. But in a Rajarshi, they are not combined. When he is quiet, there is no force. When there is force, there is no quietude. There is a division between the two. So Vishwamitra, before he became the highest sage, he was like that. And that is why he was opposed to Vasishtha, because he wanted Vasishtha to tell him that he is Brahmarshi, when he was not. He wanted to be called the highest, because he was Rajarshi actually, not a Brahmarshi. So he wanted to claim. And Vasishtha was a man of true wisdom. So he said, I will not call you by a wrong name. When you are not a Brahmarshi, I won't call you Brahmarshi, I will call you Rajarshi. And he was getting angry. Why don't you call me Brahmarshi? That was his main question. And he was very angry. So that was the reason of the main conflict and fight between Vishwamitra and Brahmarshi, the Vasishtha. Now, Vasishtha knew that although he is Rajarshi now, he has a great potentiality in him. He can become Brahmarshi one day, provided he becomes very humble. At present he is very proud, egoistic, vain. He wants falsehood to be pronounced as truth. When he is Rajarshi, he wants to be called Brahmarshi. But he knew that one day he has a possibility of becoming Brahmarshi. So if you have that whole story, you will find that one day Vishwamitra came. I wanted Dipti to tell you the story, but you are now stealing away that opportunity. What can I do? But one day Vishwamitra came to the house of Vasishtha with a decision to destroy him. That was his intention, that he will now kill him. Because Vasishtha was not responding to his demand. He wanted to be Brahmarshi, and he was not being so called by Vasishtha. So he stood at the gate and was about to enter. Then he heard a conversation between Vasishtha and his wife. And Vasishtha began to praise Vishwamitra and told his wife that he is actually very great. I am very kind to him actually. So the wife was surprised, said that even though he has destroyed so much of yours, progeny, everything, still why do you praise him? He said, no, he is absolutely on the threshold. He is about to become Brahmarshi. And I don't want that he should be harmed. The moment he becomes free from pride and egoism, he will be Brahmarshi. So when he heard, Vishwamitra was outside, he heard these words from Vasishtha, all his anger went away. He really realized that Vasishtha had no prejudice against him. So he went straight, instead of killing him, he fled and straight fell at the feet of Vasishtha. When he fell at the feet of Vasishtha, Vasishtha said, O Brahmarshi, rise. His pride had gone. His Rajarshihood had gone. He had become Brahmarshi. So he became Brahmarshi at that stage. He gave up his pride and his egoism. All his anger had passed away. So he became Brahmarshi. So from that time onwards, he became a great sage. And the third chapter written by him is what he wrote after that. All right. Any other question you have? You remember now these four truths that have been discovered? Battle, sacrifice, supermind, ultimate reality. Right? Four discoveries. I will ask you at the end all the five discoveries. Then you will tell me all the five discoveries. So remember now. So I am repeating again and again. Battle, sacrifice, supermind, ultimate reality. Fifth one I have not told you yet. All right? So next time we shall meet on?
Monday.
All right. Is it all right?
Monday.
Agreeable? Agreed? Yes? Not tired? No? Good. You know, there is a science of time. And from the Vedic point of view, you can't say it is not significant. There is a significance. Not only of 2000, but every year has a significance. Every year has a meaning. But when the whole humanity is seized by a moment, it has a very wide significance. There are significances which are local, which are personal, which are regional. But when the whole world is seized by a certain moment, it has a very wide significance, universal significance. It really marks something very definitive. What is that definitive? The whole world today has become very conscious. It has begun to visualize the future. You know, there are so many articles you must have seen, the third millennium. What is going to happen in the third millennium? We also ask the question, what we have done in the second millennium? If you take account of the whole second millennium, that also is very significant. If you compare it with the first 1000, what was achieved by mankind in 1000 years, and now compare it with what we are now in the second 2000 years, tremendous change we have seen. In 1972, in the month of November, Mother gave me a message. She had written down, and when I went to her, she gave me that piece of paper and said, read it. In the Mother's Agenda of 1972, you will find there is a footnote of this message. The exact terms I will not be able to tell you because I don't remember word by word. But if you want word by word, you see the conversation that is between me and the Mother. When Dalai Lama came to the Mother, he came on the 18th of January 1973. So if you see the conversation, there is an addendum to this conversation of 18th January 1973, an addendum in which there is an account of questions put by Dalai Lama to the Mother. And I had put the questions of Dalai Lama to the Mother, and Mother was answering those questions to me. And then one of the questions that Dalai Lama had asked was that there is today a good deal of goodwill and sincerity in the world, but it is not enough. So his question was, is there some hope in this world? Because goodwill and sincerity are there, but they are not enough. So with that little goodwill and sincerity, can we really have a real hope for the future? That was the meaning of the question. I am again not telling you the word by word the question and answer. For that you have to read the text itself. I am only giving the gist of that question. So Mother said, there will be. That is to say, the victory is certainly going to happen. This is one absolute assurance given by the Mother. But if more and more people are sincere, more and more people have goodwill, it will become quicker. But that it will be, there is no question. It will be. And Mother said, if the supermind begins to work more and more powerfully, then it will be quicker. Then I told the Mother, but Mother, supermind is working now powerfully, isn't it? That was my question to the Mother. So she said, yes, it is, but I had given you the message already. She had given me the message in the month of November, towards the end of November, and the text of that message is given at that stage in the agenda. If you read the agenda of that date, the dialogue between the questions of the Dalai Lama to the Mother, you will find this in the footnote of that message. The message said, before dying, falsehood rises in full swing. That is to say, she had given the exact stage where we had reached in the world movement, world progression. That falsehood is about to die. That was the stage. But before dying, it is rising in full swing. So today, Mother said, there is not a stage of history of the world where falsehood was so intense as today. That was January 1973. She said, people are telling lies automatically. It is as if by habit, not even intentionally, just to tell a lie is just automatically happening to the people. He said, such a situation is today. So that was in 1973. Now you are asking the question about 2000. Now my own view is that between 73 and 2000, the falsehood has risen in the full swing, has done its very best to destroy all that is truthful and good in the world, and that battle has now turned towards a stage where truth is overpowering. So to my mind, 2000 represents that moment where falsehood is now down, as it were. In a wrestling, up till now truth was down and falsehood was on the top, trying its best to throttle the truth. Now a stage has been reached, this is my personal view, and I think that 2000 marks a point where now truth is overpowering the falsehood. So it's very significant. We can expect that now whoever tries to cling to the truth will have greater chances of victory and of survival. This is my view about 2000. This is significance of 2000 to my mind. All right? Fine? All right. Thank you.